Last time on the podcast, your host, Dr. Retro and Childhood of the 80s, along with our guest, Christy, talked for way too long, so we had to split the episode into two parts. And now, the thrilling conclusion of 80s teen dramas here on the Cinema Time Capsule Podcast.
And we're back, and we are going to throw to Jeff, Child of the 80s, with his next selection.
Okay, this is a 1989 film. This is called Dead Poets Society, starring a little-known actor named Robin Williams, Ethan Hawke, Kurtwood Smith from That 70s Show, Robert Sean Leonard. It's written by Tom Schulman, who you may recognize from What About Bob and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, directed by Peter Weir, who did Witness, Mosquito Coast, and Truman Show, and it was produced by Paul Junger Witt. Dead Poets Society is a 1989 American drama film directed by Peter Weir, starring Robin Williams. The movie set in 1959 at the elite Welton Academy at an all-male prep school in Vermont. The story follows a group of students and their English teacher, John Keating, who inspires them to seize the day and live life to the fullest. At the beginning of the school year, the students are introduced to Keating, a former student of Welton Academy, who inspires them to think for themselves and to question the strict and traditional values of the school. Keating's unorthodox teaching methods include encouraging the students to stand up on their desks to get a different perspective and to recite poetry aloud to express themselves. Meanwhile, the school administration becomes concerned about Mr. Keating's teaching methods and attempt to force him to conform to their traditional values. When Keating is investigated, the students, led by Neil's friend Tom Anderson, stand up for Keating and his teachings, but Keating is fired by the school administration before leaving. Keating tells his students to continue to think for themselves and to seize the day. And the movie ends with a triumphant standing on the desks reciting, "Oh, Captain, my Captain."
Which was awesome.
Oh, my gosh. I am getting chills right now. I'm sorry.
I can turn the heating up.
And I'm cold.
So why did you choose this movie, Jeff?
So I was pretty impressionable when I first saw it. I don't think I saw it in a theater. I think it was on one of the movie channels. So
at Stefan's house?
No, it was actually at my dad's house. And I must have been 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. And the movie started to inspire me to start new things. I started like doing drama, which Joel and I did together.
Grade 9 drama class.
So I started doing a bit of acting. I started to read poetry, which seems weird, but for me, it was like, oh, yeah, I could read this and be cool. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, the portrayal of Mr. Keating pushed me towards higher education. I was not known for my academic abilities in high school until later on. And I actually wanted to be Mr. Keating. My friends and I started reading poetry and writing poetry. And with a little bit of chagrin, I reenacted the Nwanda scene at a party with a red lightning bolt painted on my chest.
Really?
And I wrote here, if Lloyd Dobler was the teen I wanted to be, Mr. Keating was the man I wanted to grow into.
Whoa.
It's
that's
heavy.
Poetic. That Isn't is poetic. That? Yeah.
That's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Too heavy.
And after watching it again, revisiting, what was your conclusion on
so,
whether this could or should go into the capsule?
I've only probably watched it 150 times.
Okay,
so,
fair.
So, you know. This
still
was
up in the air.
This was, I wanted to leave this to the very last film. Just, I watched all the films and I rewatched this. I'm like, okay, I better do this in earnest again, even though I can do the whole movie. Is this something that should go in the time capsule? I believe this is one of Robin Williams' best film, one of his best films, totally divergent from his slapstick stuff. And this film, I think, is a turning point in his career and one of the first times we see a vulgar comedian turn towards like serious roles, and you get to see that yes, comedians have some acting chops in them. Mm-hmm. Williams was nominated for an Academy Award, and you know, many of those types of actors would follow in his path. So ultimately, I think even though it might be, you know, too schmaltzy now and, you know, feel good or whatever, I do think it could work in the cinema time capsule. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not as much as the other teen films, but I'm good with it.
It's definitely the most serious of all the films.
Oh, yeah. Serious tones. And, yeah, and it does have, it does.
There's no dancing.
Yeah,
no.
It does. It's a very serious film. I'm not sure, I know why I picked it, but it's definitely not like a feel good, hey, this is fun.
Mm-hmm. There's not a single montage.
No, there's, thank you for that.
Yeah.
There is no montage.
And it's, as we've discussed in other episodes, it's a period set. So it's,
right.
Which is different than all the other teen films we're talking about. The other ones are all set in the 80s. So
no,
essentially,
not Footloose.
Oh, right. It was set in the 80s, but inspired by events in the 70s.
All right.
Whereas this one, was it the 50s?
It was 1959.
50s, yeah.
59.
Okay. So it was different in that way.
Right. So some of the things that I really love about it, even in rewatches, I love the musical score by Maurice Jarre. I just think it's beautiful the way that they put that whole piece together. I think it's beautifully shot. The New England setting in, it's filmed in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
The autumn scenes were just beautiful. It was shot beautifully. And there's a winter scene where they find out about Neil's suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, even watching it last night, I'm just like, how did they... There was no snow machine. They did it in one take.
Hmm.
And I just thought it was just beautiful the way they did it. So, yeah, beautifully shot. I still think those scenes really hold up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you said, I think Robin Williams, I wonder if part of it hitting the way it did was because that was not what you expected from Ork.
Yes.
Well, Pat Morita started the trend in Karate Kid.
True, good point.
Going from Arnold to Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah. But even that, he had lots of comedic elements to him, whereas he delivered lots of one-liners.
Yeah.
But this was, I don't think, or did he make?
Had a
he
few.
Made.
He
did.
Right,
he did. He yeah. was like there were lighthearted
there were light
moments.
He
right.
started
That's
doing
true.
Like yep. You know like impersonations were,
yeah, right.
of Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And,
right.
And stuff
I
like that.
That. Yeah.
So his comedy did
bleed into
in.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say this is the first time.
No.
That
no.
A comedian turned serious.
True. But I guess as the Mr. Miyagi, he wasn't, I don't know that he would have been viewed as the star, but he was him and...
Certainly for an Academy Award nomination, I don't know.
I'm sure there are other reasons why Pat Morita was not nominated for Academy Award.
Quite possible.
Yeah, a lot of people do believe that he really nailed that role for sure.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Robin Williams, I thought, kicked butt in this one. Did a great job representing that character and trying to break to be in that environment while also stretching it for the kids seeing, because since he was a student there and came back, he seemed to present as understanding the limitations of that environment and how it was problematic and coming out of it, and tried to stretch the kids and then challenging the administration who wanted no part of that, and it appears the parents also didn't want any part of that. He nailed that role.
And again, this was definitely a movie more about father-son relationships than, you know, teen perspective, to me anyway, because you think about Mr. Keating definitely took the father role for a lot of the
right.
boys.
Yeah.
And I remember it being the first serious movie I feel like I watched, because I would have been in grade 9 when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt very, you know, cinematic and serious.
It does kind of, when you rewatch it, you're like, it almost takes itself too seriously in parts.
Right.
So
it is very long. It is.
I think it is over 2 hours. But it's one of those films that I'm sad when it's over, to be truthful. There's a lot of films like that finish, I'm like, oh, I need more.
Which is why you watch it again.
And again, you just hit play again.
And my husband pointed out that it was the first movie that he remembers watching that took male mental health seriously.
Hmm.
And teen mental health seriously. Yep. And so that, I think, was really good at the time. I do remember being devastated, you know, in the... Are we allowed to do spoilers?
I think this is...
You kind of mentioned it?
This is... I think it's... People have seen it, and if they haven't...
That's fair.
Yeah.
We can't be responsible for that. And what else did I really... Oh, and I just love, too, the whole teaching the boys to fight their fears And, you know, whether that's speaking in front of class or calling a girl or trying out for a play. And again, another teen movie that really feeds the Gen X soul of resisting conformity and not giving in to the man. Just
so
pursuing your passions and whether and that's poetry or drama or
And introduce those things that would have, even in the 80s, they would have been made fun of, lots of kids and settings that this wasn't okay. But
well, and this was again a movie for boys, and it was saying that poetry and drama and acting were okay. Like it was okay
before,
to be sensitive.
Before this movie, I was a complete jock type that would only do sports and things like that. And when I saw this, I'm like, hey, I can do that. That's okay.
Started with Footloose teaching you to dance.
I secretly did love to dance too. So I don't know. Like looking back at it, for me, what jumps out is it's very obviously from a masculine perspective.
Yeah.
The one way they kind of weave around that though is by setting it in 1959 at an all boys school.
Right.
So they're able to compartmentalize that, and you're like, where are the female actresses? They're not very apparent at all.
Well, and when they are apparent, they're like so brutal. Like the moms are all these like doting, passive mothers who are just, you know, they're there. It's, you know, and letting the father speak or yell or make all the rules. And again, set in 1959. So there are definitely certain roles there, but you can't tell me that there weren't mothers who were standing up for their kids or had something to say other than through tears. And Chris's role as the love interest was hugely problematic, like, and how Knox treated her, like, you know, he sexually assaults her while she's sleeping.
Right.
And then somehow she's consoling Knox in the end, like after Chet beats him up, which I don't, you know, condone violence, but he beats him up for what he did. And then somehow Chris is consoling Knox. And then, you know, he again, when they go to the play, Knox doesn't take no for an answer. He pressures her into going to the play with him. And, you know, no means yes, apparently. So that's not cool.
Nope.
So, yeah. So there it's, I can totally see boys' school. You're not going to have a lot of women in the film, but maybe the women could have had a bit more character complexity and not just been, you know, assault victims or doting, passive mothers.
But I wonder if that, in some ways, accurately reflects that setting too. The problematic elements that likely exist in an all boys school. Oh no, I'm just referencing that those are the things probably that when you are in that sort of setting, then the boys don't learn how to engage differently because.
I think if for boys who went to if I was a guy who went to an all boys school, I wouldn't want to be lumped in. With, oh, because I went to an all-boys school, I'm going to be a sexual assaulter or have problematic views of women. Do you know what I mean? Because they can have diverse.
Oh, for sure. You know? And I think this movie demonstrates that effort of the teacher trying to broaden their minds and bring in information.
There's no other role shown treating women well in the movie at all. So there's no one teaching them. Like, if anything, Knox is being encouraged in all of his behavior,
right,
which is not good. And they're not getting that it is a problem to me as a, because I'm watching this and I'm like, ooh, that's really bad.
Right. Yeah.
Like that's terrible. And I had, complete lack of diversity, which is probably sadly accurate, but I'm sure there were some, you know, people of diverse backgrounds who even went to prep schools in the 50s. I'm sure, you know, it wasn't probably all white, but maybe it was. And then the appropriation around the Nwanda, you know, that scene is a problem. And they're meeting in the Indian cave, you know, drawing the markings on his face, and even like the one poem that he's reading about the Congo, and then suddenly like they're chanting and, you know, it's like, that made me cringe.
So even with those moments, I still was able to find enjoyment out of it.
Out of the movie, out of the
out of the film, even with those moments. And
let me
having
say
an
I
awareness.
Loved this movie as a kid. I loved it as a kid, but as an adult I didn't find it held up.
I still love it. I still, the end scene every time, man, chokes me up. Like even last night, they're getting up on the tables. I'm watching it. And I'm like, it's not going to happen this time. And then I get a lump in my throat. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous.
Well, it's like the Lloyd Dobler scene. Like that scene is iconic. And, you know, them getting up on the desks and standing up for their teacher who understood them, who encouraged them to be different. Like that chokes me up too. I'm not saying it doesn't choke me up, but I find overall the movie didn't hold up for me. It felt long, kind of taking itself a little bit too seriously. It does not negate the fact that there's some iconic scenes in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a kid, it was like I said, it was like the first movie where I felt like a little grown up and maturing.
Right.
You know,
I was, I had my Oh Captain, My Captain situation happened the other day, you know, when
I thought you were gonna say a tattoo.
No, I don't do tattoos. That's Dr. Retro. But you know, every teacher, Simon would know this, every educator wants to have that moment with their students, and you never really have them. But I went to Starbucks the other day, and that former student was there, saw me, and said, Mr. Child of the 80s, because that's my name. And I said, yeah, how's it going? And they're like, here, there's a free coffee for you. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, they were working.
Yeah, they were working. That's awesome. That just says how old I am. But that was my Oh Captain, My Captain moment. So I didn't get the revolt.
Free Tim's.
I didn't get the revolt. It was Starbucks. So like that's another dollar more.
And you didn't find spit in your coffee then.
Oh, that's
the opposite.
Oh, it could have been actually. Maybe. So no, I've never had that experience. But honestly though, I rewatching it, I'm good with the film. I still love the film. Joel, anything else from you on this film?
Nothing I can think of. I can appreciate the elements that are problematic, and at the same time wondering, is that probably a genuine experience for adolescents, in particular adolescent boys at that time period, of doing things that then now as adults we're looking back and go, here's why that we have questions about it or don't agree with it. But often that's the ground where we're doing stupid things that then only later think back and like, that wasn't good.
And when you're in the stream, you're getting fed information, you conform. And that was what the whole thing is about, right? And here's a question. Does anyone know of anyone that even went to a private school when you were a teenager?
Yeah.
What private school? Like, do you remember?
Well, I know people. Sorry, I didn't know them as a teenager. I know them now who went to private
school. That was like for me, and I didn't know.
Oh, no, I did. No, I did.
A
know.
Single person at a private either. School. So it was very alien to me.
So I knew kids who went to private school in elementary school, and then they went to high school with me.
Okay.
And so they left their private school and went to a public high school.
Okay.
So that was, must have been a big change for them.
Do you remember talking about it? What their experience was?
We didn't talk about anything. Like, what did we talk about?
It's
like, whose house are we going to hang out at?
Yeah.
Right? Who's got a car? Let's go to the mall. Like, we didn't talk in depth.
Simon, did you know anyone did you know anyone that went to a private school?
Simon probably did.
Well, I'm surprised. You guys never crossed paths with anybody who went to Hillfield?
No.
No.
No. We are from Lower Stony Creek, dude. We're not from the upper
it's
echelon.
In the city, but
we're not from the West End.
I know some kids that I went to summer camp with went to.
You went to summer camp?
Yeah, get old money. Want to keep it there?
Yeah, money bags. His two paper routes.
Can I also point out? I paid for my own way to.
I know, because you're a very wealthy newspaper delivery.
Yes,
person.
Exactly. I was a newspaper delivery tycoon at the time.
Joel and I did have a run-in with a private school at one point, and it was awesome. When we played rugby, the Ridley High School would come off in their like air-conditioned bus, and they'd come out, and we were like ragtag, and we just destroy them and send them back on their
We
bus.
Just had a couple really good
the
players.
The working class.
So then, they won it for us.
So, and my father-in-law.
So, see, you had interaction. You did have interaction. Did you while you're on the field? Did you talk about their experiences and their feelings?
Oh yeah, in the rucks, we were definitely
read some poetry together.
They did not like our poetry, so
it was a poetry of a different sort.
They were conformists. My father-in-law did go to private school in the 50s at a boarding school. And he said it was the worst experience of his life.
Really?
And I know people who loved it. Like, I know both. I know both people who hated it and both. Yeah.
But he was in the 50s, so he would have been in
this
that.
This would have been his
that
era.
That era of conformity. You don't get to see your parents.
Yeah.
You don't question authority. You're there. You don't interact. So that was my only real look into like what the 1950s would have looked like.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Wow.
And that is Dead Poets Society. Can Bobby
love? Cindy Mancini and Ronald Miller live on the same street, but they're in totally different worlds.
Wouldn't you like to be popular?
Cindy's hot, Ronald's not, but he's got a plan that could change all that.
I want to rent you.
Rent me?
Yeah. You pretend you like me, and we go out for just a few weeks.
Just going out with me is not going to make you popular.
Well, I have $1,000. It says it will.
Now, the biggest social transformation in history.
No hand-holding, no kissing, and I get my lunch hour off.
Is about to begin.
Okay, Donald, we're ready.
Listen to one last thing.
Yeah.
My name is Ronald. Not Donald.
I think that's Ronald Miller. Didn't you like
to mow our lawn?
Ronald's over in No Man's Land, and he's still alive.
He's going from totally geek.
Totally chic.
Let's dance!
To totally out of control.
I have moves.
All I ever did was think about you.
Say yourself. Don't change to
me. Me change?
Ever. It's the comedy that proves $1,000 can buy popularity, but it can't buy me love.
He's such a heartbreaker.
Oh, our next film. Yeah. Moving along. This one was chosen by Joel.
It was.
Joel, and what is this film?
And endorsed by Jeff.
Yeah.
1987 brought us Can't Buy Me Love, which starred Patrick Dempsey as Ronald Miller, Amanda Peterson as Cindy Mancini. Then the rest of the cast included Courtney Gaines, an early appearance of Seth Green, Eric Bruscader, who is a well-known. He played always the big jock in a lot of movies and shows like The Wonder Years. And it was written by Michael Swerdlick, who did he didn't do a lot. 8 episodes of Doogie Howser.
Great show.
And 6 episodes of Who's the Boss?
Another banger.
Then directed by Steve Rash, and the executive producers were Ron Beckman and Jerry Henshaw. So Ronald Miller is tired of being a nerd and makes a deal with one of the most popular girls in school, Cindy, to help him break into the cool clique. He offers her $1,000, all the money he earned from cutting grass, to pretend to be his girlfriend for a month. It succeeds, but he soon learns that the price of popularity may be higher than he expected.
Why did you choose this film?
Well, like Lloyd Dobler, I could relate to Ronald Miller. I was pretty smart, not a genius. I'm not Ray Lau level or Dr. Marco, and studious, and that did not get attention from girls when I was a teenager. Of course, I also wasn't into partying, so that kept me out of the cool club, too.
You came to a party.
I did, the one time. I think it was grade 13.
I remember that. That was my house.
Yeah, it was at your house. And, I didn't... It was an unusual experience for me. And I felt like, yes, there were things about Ronald that I would never do, and not great examples, but he shows some character at points that... He tried to get along with anyone and everyone. He made sacrifices that he regretted before and then saw that they weren't worth it. So I appreciated that about the character.
So having rewatched it, do you advocate for its placement in the cinema time capsule?
I do. It's still, to me, it held up. There were some positive elements to it in terms of the story and character that I felt were redeeming to some degree, and encouraging things that, you know, the scenes when he reminds the bully that, you know, they were friends before, and sort of breaks down a lot of those boundaries or barriers that get often erected during high school. And so he saw the mistakes he made throughout it and tried to do something different. So I liked it.
So
I would put it in there.
Just I really like this movie, but I have to say this may have some of the more problematic material.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to cue Christy on this right now.
these guys already know what I think about
she's
it.
She's ready to go.
I have
go.
So many notes on this one.
So I do want to say I do like it, but I can definitely, on the rewatch, see some of the problems mm-hmm. that are associated with it.
I just think there's some movies that have so many issues with it, like that you can't keep encouraging people watching it, and this is one of them. Like the whole premise on this is like renting a girl, like child
it's about
trafficking.
Love, man.
It's about child trafficking. Like renting a girl, and she's...
And that's the podcast, folks. Thank you for listening.
Mic drop. Yeah, it's just such an issue. Like that is not cool at all. And putting, like, taking advantage of a situation, difficult situation that she's in, and that's the only offer to her is you have to pretend to be my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, mm-hmm. that is. That's pretty pretty low. Mm-hmm. And so I to be fair, I did not watch this as a kid, so I do not have any nostalgia for it. Mm-hmm. I found the writing really in low taste, like it's, you know, the talking about people with special needs. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like you don't hear those derogatory terms in the other movies we watch from the same era, and right. so I found that really low. And why is there a guy in home ec with a shirt on?
Was that Big John? No, was that the...
I don't remember that.
It's in the home ec class.
Yeah,
the
was it the guy with the
doesn't
hair?
Doesn't have a shirt on.
Like he's got really nice brown
know.
Hair.
I don't remember. It's yeah, just I remember.
It happens. Maybe
my shirt's off right now, everyone.
And,
so.
Like,
but my gut's hanging over the belt.
I can overlook one fart joke, but multiple.
No, hold on.
Absolutely
I'm sorry.
Not.
I'm gonna hold
Absolutely
you. I'm gonna hold you right there. The fart gag was one of the best gags in cinematic history. I thought they didn't go to it enough. Okay,
disagree.
That's where I will stand, yeah. Pat.
The hill will die.
So
on.
There's this.
You can have that. I will not appreciate it.
Let
but
me
I
set.
Will.
Wasn't made for you.
Let
this
me
movie
scene.
Was most definitely not made for any.
The best
woman.
Part of the film.
Now, let me actually liked it.
That's
yeah.
That's all right. We
overall,
but it doesn't mean it was made for her.
No, that's true.
So Seth Green, I think, is the shining star. He was the guy that was Dr. Evil's son. So mm-hmm. to bring it up to speed, he was amazing in this movie. So charismatic. He was probably 11 or 12. But the gag was he would follow his brother around, and every time he would. There would be Big John would fart in his direction, and the smell was so noxious that it would knock him out. And they went back to the gag two or three times, and I was left feeling like, why don't we do this again? Like, go back to it.
I think it
that just says
its
a lot.
Run,
yeah. Joel, so. Did you enjoy that part?
Of course.
Did you laugh out loud, even though you saw it 100 times before?
No, I don't know that I kept laughing, but I definitely I smiled because fart humor is my favorite.
Especially the station wagon one where he directs Big John to
it's
the...
so ridiculous.
And then Seth Green's crawling out of the car. I don't know. I thought it was...
That was the only funny fart.
Cinematic genius.
I think it was more an issue. Like, wasn't the football player farting just yes. in general in the room?
Yeah,
that
he leaned up, he went up against the screen and the kids outside the window.
But then Patrick Dempsey realized that he could use it to his advantage, yeah. and he did.
Yeah. Yeah, he was often using things to his advantage, wasn't
True.
He? Also, the random girls' change room scene that was basically
yeah,
just to watch.
That was uncomfortable.
Young teen girls in yeah. their underwear.
Yep.
Not cool. Ronald's brother decapitating a Barbie doll. Not cool.
Mm. Interestingly, you talk about that shower scene. I did a little bit
Change
of research.
Yeah.
There was only one teen girl in the film,
yep.
I believe.
But it was about teen. They were supposed to be teen
But that's
girls.
What I, that I'm getting to that yeah. point is where I saw it as a youngster and I saw these quote unquote teen girls. They were full-fledged women, and they looked like full-fledged women. So it was like a total mismatch and like your expectation of, oh, this is what it's going to look in high school. And it didn't, because they were like, the way they were cast was just way over the top. And I had that conversation with my daughter while we were watching it, and I was just like, you know that these aren't teen girls. And that was, I thought that was a kind of a weird casting
decision. Why would
they
even have that scene? What's that scene for?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like 200 scenes like that in the 1980s.
Yeah, but this movie in particular.
But that's what I mean. Like, there's like there could be movies that have nothing to do with shower scenes, and all of a sudden there's a shower scene.
Yeah.
Like any 80s horror movie, there's like, okay, we're walking through. Oh, let's do a shower scene now. Yeah. Right. So there's totally gratuitous mm-hmm. in the middle of this film. And again, yeah, it was kind of as I'm watching it, I was uncomfortable with that situation.
Me too. Oh, yeah.
It should have been many scenes in here.
But strangely, I have to say.
Shall we go to the cultural appropriation of the PBS?
Yeah, that was.
So that was an interesting one, too. That was Ronald's trying to learn how to dance, mm-hmm. and he wants to watch American Bandstand. And he turns it on, and there's people dancing.
African cultural hour.
And so he comes on, and he starts dancing. And the moves are really slick and everything. And then the brother comes in and says, African cultural hour, meaning that it's not cool to dance mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then shift over. Then he gets everyone dancing like he that at the dance.
Like classic appropriation, mm-hmm. cultural appropriation.
Yeah. And turned it into a comedy trope, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I did find that problematic as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems with this one. The whole plot was a problem to me, so I cannot get past it. I'd be embarrassed if this was put in the time capsule. I'll put that down. I'll throw that down right now.
That's some serious.
I'd be embarrassed if this was representative of my age group and time. That's embarrassing.
Interestingly, though, of all the films I watched with my kid, she said this was the most enjoyable one.
Interesting.
And not that she related to it in particular, but I think the way that the narrative was set up and the characters developed maybe the relationship that developed. And I said, I don't like Patrick Dempsey was in, what was the big show that he was in that I did not watch? Was it a medical show?
Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy. Yeah. And he was known as McDreamy. And I thought he was really awkward looking in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I said, is he McDreamy? And she said, oh yeah.
Well, that's my kid loves Grey's Anatomy.
So yeah, but she had never seen Grey's Anatomy and just said, yeah, he's pretty cool. Like, he looks pretty cool.
Hmm.
And my favorite line from the film that I use at least twice a week is, I mean, he went from geek to totally chic. Like, I use that all the time. And that's because, Christy, you didn't see the movie growing up, but, like, there's some quotables in there for sure.
What's another one?
Well, my favorite.
Or is there one? Oh, no. There's
a couple that I don't want.
Here's the good one.
Oh, right. Because they're derogatory.
Yeah. They're very derogatory. Right.
This is where I mean, this would be embarrassing if it was put in the time capsule because I don't want this to represent.
This is strong.
My age group.
This is strong.
Because all the movies have problems. Like, we've talked about that.
Yep.
And
I'm just going to jump in here. I agree with everything you're saying, but interestingly enough, I watched Adventures with Babysitting with my daughter.
Oh,
we
gosh.
Turned it off halfway through. We never went back for most of these reasons.
Yeah.
And
I probably would have said the same thing if we could have watched it.
But also because you saw that one as a kid. I think that changes your whole perspective. I remember watching this one when I was a kid, really liking it, watching it again years ago. But when I was a young adult and be like, yeah, I'm not watching this one again.
That's the
thing,
right?
I haven't watched it recently, so. But I remember really liking it as a kid.
And I probably would have loved it as a kid.
Yeah.
I grew up in the same time frame.
That might be why the part that hooks me is Ronald, one, not fitting in, finding a way in, and then it being.
Through child trafficking.
Yes, I didn't have any money, so I couldn't participate in that. And then seeing the problem of getting in and then it not being fulfilling.
He doesn't see the problem of renting her. He sees the problem of, and it was the problem of the power going to his head, and he becomes a jerk.
He did
become a jerk.
Yeah.
It wasn't about having the power being popular. It was about who he became.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And so the quote that I like in that penultimate scene is when he says, nerds, jocks, my side, your side, it's all BS. It's hard enough just trying to be yourself.
I just got goosebumps when you recited that.
Yes.
And I felt that.
I actually laughed at that when
I still like that.
And as a shout out for Canadiana, there is a character who uses the term hosehead at one point, which I don't think would have been really well known in America.
It's true. Hosers.
Yeah.
So another neat thing, not neat, is Patrick Dempsey was 20 at the time.
He was. Yeah.
So again, he was
almost a teen. he remembered being a teen.
He was almost a teen. Amanda Peterson was 15.
That's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another weird thing, right? Like seeing much older people.
And I would have reversed it.
Ops Yeah, opposite.
They
yeah.
looked. She looked older than him.
She did seem more sophisticated.
Yeah. And as I found out that there were a couple interesting things of, so this movie was done without the Screen Actors Guild, and in the cheerleading scene, you can actually see the picketers in the background. They just are there. if you go looking for it, Paula Abdul makes an appearance nice. As one of the dancers.
Love Paula.
And she did the choreography actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And in one of, in the, that scene when Ronald, they're in the yard and he gives his speech. If you watch, apparently to the right of them, there's an extra wearing a black t-shirt and he can be seen sucker punching another extra in the face wearing a pink t-shirt.
Is that where pink t-shirt day began? Because
I don't know,
of that?
Maybe. But anyhow, if you want to go looking for that.
How many montages are there in this movie though?
Oh.
I mean, that's the important. It seems to be. We should get like a montage meter.
I don't know.
For each of these movies.
Need to pay closer attention to that.
And Ronald's another note. Ronald's best friend, Kenneth, also played the pizza guy in Home Alone.
Yeah.
He did?
Mm-hmm.
Folks popping up.
Are you sure?
Yep. Check. Google it.
So I don't know. I saw this movie in the theater. It's one of my sister. Child of the 80s, Devin. This is one of our favorite all-time movies because we saw it as kids. This was at the Center Mall Cineplex Theater. Whoa. So it was like the newer one.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of nostalgia glasses on for this for sure. For me.
Yep.
So just as much as like I had nostalgia for Karate Kid, but admittedly, I don't feel I can have a say in Karate Kid being in a time capsule. I did not watch this one as a child, but watching it and comparing it even to all the other, you know, problems in the other movies, I think it's obvious that I really don't want this.
It was your
this.
Least favorite.
No, I don't want this in a time capsule.
Of the six, it has to be ranked. It was six.
It doesn't even get on the rank for me. I hated this movie so much.
I would like to hear from some of our listeners to hear if they hated it as well.
I'm probably not. I tend to have strong feelings about things, so.
It doesn't come across.
Really? if you knew, I'm holding back.
I can't believe you're holding back on this.
I'm really holding back.
I'm scared.
You should be. No, I didn't enjoy this.
Let's unleash Joel. Christy.
Oh, yeah. No, Joel needs to.
Oh, sorry.
Joel didn't have his say.
What?
I thought you didn't have your say. If...
No,
no, we're segueing now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're segueing.
Yeah. No, we're good on this.
Are you good? Yeah. Can I segue now?
I think we're very clear.
Insert segue here. Beep. Now, having said that, we're going to throw it over to...
Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Which is not cliche at all, actually.
No.
So we're sending it over to Christy. Girls Just Want to Have Fun is your film. Do you want to go ahead with this one?
Sure.
Go for it.
So this was one of my all-time favorites as a kid, and I remember watching it in my best friend's basement on her cabinet TV.
Cool.
At the time, so probably on VHS. But, oh, we don't have any of the stars in the notes. Great. Now I got to try to remember.
Okay, let's do this. Somehow. We've got
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Helen Hunt.
Yep.
Lee Montgomery.
Shannon Doherty.
Joel Silverman.
And Joel Silverman. Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Thanks.
Didn't even need the notes.
There we go.
We don't need notes.
My perimenopausal brain is not completely malfunctioning today. That's fantastic.
We don't need no stinking notes.
I do need the Google, though. Amy Spies, let's just note, the only female writer in this in this list of movies, which is cool and very rare unicorn in the and even now. Still, sadly, it's getting better, but we're not at parity yet. And it's awesome to see a woman writing movies in the 80s. Director was Alan Metter, or hopefully I'm saying that right. Sorry, Alan. He also did Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
Great movie.
Don't remember that one.
Another adult playing a teen.
Watched it a couple weeks ago.
Producer Stuart Cornfield of European Vacation.
Awesome movie.
Problematic movie.
It's awesome.
The Fly, The Elephant Man, Robert Lyons, Chuck Russell, Back to School, and The Mask. Who did those two? As well. So cool. All right. Synopsis. Janie is new in town and soon meets Lynn, her immediate best friend at school, who shares her passion for dancing and dance TV in particular. So those of us who remember Much Music and mm-hmm. MTV, more Much Music.
Electric Circus,
yeah. And competition is announced to find a new dance TV couple. And so Janie and Lynn decide to audition. And the whole movie is around auditioning for the show. And Janie has to disobey her father, who doesn't approve of Janie doing anything other than school.
So why, out of all the teen movies, did you choose this film?
Again, because I absolutely loved it as a kid, just like Karate Kid. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we chose all of our films. Yep. I had very strict parents, and so I could identify with Janie. I never disobeyed them. But I really wanted to be Lynn, the cool best friend. Mm. Lynn, played by Helen Hunt.
She was really cool.
I wanted to be her, and looking back, there weren't many 80s teen movies with a female protagonist, and even fewer written by a woman. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that I identified with it at mm-hmm. a core level, I think. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this movie was for me. It was actually written for me.
Yep.
So that's cool.
Is this going to go into the time capsule? Should it be?
I say absolutely. It is problematic there, and we'll talk about that later. I have some issues with it, but overall, I think it holds up. I think it captures a moment in pop culture in history with, you know, like we said, Much Music mm-hmm. and our love of dancing and music on television that a lot of us 80s kids can identify with. The idealism of following your passion, again, is a strong theme through all of our movies. Mm-hmm. Love that with my Gen Xer heart. And taking no crap, especially from the man, really struck a chord with my preteen heart. The commentary on class, I know you don't like that word, Joel, but, you know, just Lee Montgomery's character mm-hmm. and his dad fighting against the man, Natalie's dad, who employs Lee Montgomery's dad. I think, and also a rare example of a movie written by a woman, I think for sure that should go in the time capsule as an anomaly. I think it does. It was definitely one of my favorites. And my daughter, it is also one of her favorites. So it does hold up.
Something you can share. Nice.
I know. I may have had something to do with training her in that and making her watch it when she was very little. But yeah,
this is the only one that I didn't get a chance to show my daughter. I wish I did so I could get her feelings on it. Yeah. For me, this is basically like, it reminds me of shows like Solid Gold and Dance mm-hmm. Fever. I don't know if I watched those.
Oh yeah.
I didn't watch those.
So like my sister was a competitive dancer. So that made me have to watch all this stuff. So I hated all of it, including this movie when I watched it.
Oh yeah.
Why did you hate it?
Because it's about dancing. And I didn't want...
So just fundamental dance?
Was like more
but you
like...
Footloose, and that's about dancing.
Yeah, but there was fighting in it. There was punching out.
There were boys dancing.
Yeah.
Girls dancing.
Yeah, it was so masculine. It was still masculine. And, you know, Ren got on the gymnastic bars and did stuff like that. So I hated it because I was revolting. I was, you know, I don't... But now rewatching it... I'm like, and, you know, from, you know, watching Dead Poets Society, I'm like, why didn't I dance? And why wasn't I involved in that universe? Because it looked totally fun. It looked like they were having the best time. Yeah. And Lee Montgomery was absolutely jacked in this film. Like, he had a dancer's body. I'm like, look at this.
Born in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and how come he's so hairy as a 17-year-old?
That was in my notes.
That was your note.
That was my note.
Like, he had his shirt off. Hairy. I'm like... Dang, man. Like, for a 17-year-old, eh?
Well, and he was how old?
He had to be in his mid-20s.
He was in his 20s. The only character who was of the right age was Shannon Doherty. She was 14 in her
Don't throw a mental, Dad.
And there you go.
There's
Shannon.
The sound clip.
She was wonderful in this film, actually.
I thought she was great. Yeah. She was such a strong character. So she played Lee Montgomery's sister. And their mom, I don't know if she died or I don't know where she went. Again, it was one of those.
I think writers just do that to reduce the complexity of like the characters.
Well,
like,
I think then people can project themselves onto it too, right? Like whether they come from a divorced family or a parent.
I just think it's lazy writing. Like, I don't want to pay for another parental figure. I think we're giving too much credit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that. Oh, it's so jaded.
So, see, but the other thing, Lee Montgomery didn't do much, but I wrote in the notes, like, he's in one of my all-time favorite Halloween specials called The Midnight Hour. It's on YouTube. Go watch it. He's fantastic in it.
Cool.
So, Joel, what are your thoughts? Did you see this as a kid?
I don't recall seeing it
Most
as a kid.
Most people don't even know.
No, like, it's
I knew the name.
Well, they know the song.
Well, but even I knew it was a movie, but yeah. I, like you said,
you
at
knew
that
it existed.
Age, I mean, it's 1984, right? So we were
you're
seven.
Not yeah,
so
you're not watching that.
That was not made for
and
me.
And you didn't
as
watch
a seven
it in
year
VHS.
Old boy. I might have. I just have no recollection of it. So. It was cool to go back and visit it for the first time.
Because
Melanie loved it. She remembered loving the movie as a kid, so then we watched it together. It's more than some of the other movies, there were a lot of like references of the time.
Yeah.
Like there's the one quote where Lynn says, "Velcro, next to the Walkman and Tab, it's the coolest invention of the 20th century."
And like, that is an iconic scene.
What's a Walkman? What's Tab? Right?
You can't make that.
But that's
in
when she turns
movie.
Her skirt around, yeah. her Catholic girl yeah. skirt around in the bus, which is the coolest move
yeah.
on the
no,
planet.
It was total boss move. Yeah.
Total boss
yeah, yeah.
move.
It was awesome.
And so. They were terrible babysitters.
Yeah. No, or cool babysitters.
Yeah,
like,
true.
Yeah, that baby wound up on sitting
in
on a pizza,
pizza
which is... seemed like it would ruin the pizza, but. But even that I could relate to, because even as a I read the Babysitter's Club books. I did the class through the Y mm-hmm. to learn how to be a babysitter. So that was like a cool image I could relate to, especially because I was definitely not alpha male through most
of
my life.
Yeah, that's so true.
So then I was like, that would be awesome if I got hired to babysit some kid and then we just got snacks because, you know, our snacks were limited. There were things that I could relate to thinking back that even though our genders were different, I could still appreciate it and be like, this is just a cool kid thing, not about that it's girls. I mean, it was obviously aimed at that demographic.
Yeah,
hunky teenage boy. Cool teenage
hunky
girls.
Mid-20s boy.
yeah.
But he was like the blue-collar kid, right?
True. The clothing was also humorous watching, and I was like, oh, I should have remembered to do this earlier. I was going to try and recreate his outfit the one day when they were practicing, where he's wearing jeans with knee pads over top.
That's right.
And like a sweatshirt with cut off arms.
Yes.
And I was like,
hilarious.
I should have gone to Valley Village and done this.
Notice Janie did not need knee pads, but Lee Montgomery did.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It's
so,
true.
I mean, obviously Sarah probably wasn't doing all of her own moves. And actually, I don't think she was. Natalie did all of her own dancing in the movie because she was actually a professional dancer.
Hmm.
And which
yeah,
I didn't know.
Is that Helen Hunt, you mean?
No, Helen Hunt.
She's Lynn, right?
Is Lynn.
Who's
and
Natalie?
Natalie, I can't remember the actor who played Natalie, but she
the rich girl.
With the moving closet.
Yes.
That was that was the coolest thing, too.
It was a bit weird, too, in that scene where she's basically in her underwear looking for stuff.
Well, she's in her bedroom getting dressed. But weird.
But why am I watching that?
Yeah.
The actor that played Natalie is Holly, if it's sort of Frenchy, it's Gagné. G-A-G-N-I-E-R. Oh. Holly.
Cool.
So it's not a Gagné.
She's been in not much else.
No, no, I don't think she was in much.
So,
but then the guy who played her dad, I feel like he was in a lot of, like, with his silver white hair and the silver fox.
He was dastardly.
He was.
And it was like, I don't really see this happening in reality. Like, I don't see him going to the lengths of like taking away someone's livelihood so his daughter could win the competition.
No, not at all.
So you have to kind of just take that with a grain of salt. And like,
but he was the villain.
He was the rich villain. And it's always at a country club in the 80s.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
I find amazing. And it was
That was like, that's almost like the parties we were talking about. Yeah. Those parties seem to occur in every movie.
Like over the top.
And then all the movies
Karate
had.
Kid.
Had
Karate
country
Kid
clubs
had,
where
Kid had the
people
club.
Were members.
The one scene, like, and I put this in the notes, is like all of a sudden they turn the tables on him, and they're having the debutante ball, and then they hand out all these flyers, just like Jeremy Haringa did, Joel.
Yep.
And it's one of my favorite scenes.
And I found this scene hilarious, but just ridiculous as well. Like, so you know all these people are coming, and then all of a sudden someone flies through the window and just, like, brushes himself off, starts dancing, and then the bodybuilders...
Right.
Just walk up to the door frame and don't open the door. You could have punched the door down. They took the entire...
Female bodybuilders.
Yeah. They could have ripped the door off the hinges, but they decided to take the entire wall off and just throw
it
away.
It was just so great.
So much
I thought it was great.
I loved it. It was over the top. I loved it.
It was ridiculous.
Did you know that Robert Downey Jr. is in that scene?
I did see Robert Downey Jr. in that scene, which is awesome to see him.
He was dating Sarah Jessica Parker at the time.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. And so he just... And it was his punk phase. So he just was in the scene.
Mm. And then another question I have is, in the 1980s, teenagers were always shown stealthily leaving their bedroom windows.
Oh, true.
And
yes.
I did do that one time. And it was...
Now dad mode's coming out.
I did it one time. And then I asked myself, like, why did you do that? Why didn't you just go out the back door? Because I did that, and I came in through the back door. I unlocked the back door because I was going to come in the back door because I couldn't climb up my second.
Right.
So I'm like, why did you? I think I did it only because I saw it in the films
movie.
Repeatedly. But sure. It's like your parents are sleeping; they're not going to wake up. Yeah. Like I don't wake up now. Like we could have an earthquake, and I wouldn't wake up. So in every 80s movie, like they're.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah Jessica Parker is, I think, left her bedroom window 2 to 3 times.
She did. And her military dad, then puts in a security system to catch her.
Which was quite advanced. It was very, very advanced.
I thought an intercom was advanced back then. Remember those?
Yep.
We did mention that on the last episode, the intercoms.
So one thing continue. I really loved about the... I did love about like handing out the flyers and the private club scene was the diversity of people who were invited to that. Like you had the LGBTQ2S+ crew, like you had the punks, the weightlifters, like the female weightlifters, like there was like overall lack of diversity in terms of backgrounds and color.
Yeah.
But I did love the diversity of that group in terms of the backgrounds that they would have come from, and especially LGBTQ too. Mm-hmm. That was cool.
I think you're totally right about that scene. Just
it was not normal
together.
In the 80s. I feel like was not cool or not in pop culture at the time.
Right.
And I thought that was cool.
The only thing I have to say is at the end, they would not have won. I'm sorry, they're not professionally trained.
The flips? The gymnastics?
They're not going to win. They're not professionally trained. The rich girl's going to win. But, it's an 80s movie, so they have to triumph. But they would never have won. It's just not going to happen.
The one scene, though, from the country club that did almost ruin the movie for me because it was quite triggering was the Tune in Tokyo scene.
That's I always had wondered about where that scene had come from because again, that was a ubiquitous thing through the 1980s where like for some reason, if you said the word Tune in Tokyo, you could handle someone's breasts.
Well, to be totally honest, that was my experience, grade 7 and 8. Like, that's what boys did.
Really?
Yeah. And the tune...
I was sheltered, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always wondered, like, where did that come from? And when I watched the film again, I'm like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that scene.
So some boys were watching that movie.
Yeah, but because it did come back. It did come back for sure. And
it's a huge problem. I mean, it was accurate because that did happen to us.
Mm-hmm. But I wonder, did it happen 100%. Because it was glamorized through a film like that?
Yeah.
Maybe, but it's still, like, I don't know. But it was, I don't know which came first.
Right.
Yeah. So that would get you thrown in jail for sure. Like you're not going to be able to do that nowadays, and rightly so.
I really hope, but it does still.
Thanks
for
bringing that up because I remember watching it. I'm like,
assault is still a massive problem in our schools.
Yeah,
I am not going to pretend it. Sometimes it's hearing my daughter's stories. It's even worse.
Mm.
And it's terrible what she has to go through. And it makes me so sad. But so as much as I absolutely hated that movie, I do love that Drew was slapped for that, even though I don't condone violence again. Mm-hmm. But I do like that the woman at least reacted to it. But it was awful and triggering for me as a kid. Because that did happen. That right. Stuff like that did happen to mm-hmm. a lot of us. So that wasn't my favorite scene.
Sure.
But it was accurate.
Yeah. And I think that's what we've talked about a number of times in episodes of all the movies have these things that at the time, you know, were problematic then, but then either weren't challenged, were put in because that was happening in real life, or maybe glamorized. But now as adults, when we revisit it.
At the time, I was triggered. Like, it was awful watching it as a kid, too.
I mean, for somebody, the people that made the movie put that in there.
Yeah.
And most of the time, these were just, they treated it like gags. Mm-hmm. Ha ha, isn't that hilarious?
That's how it was treated in the film, for sure.
That's what I felt
it wasn't
like
treated with, like, a serious,
But then tone. That's part of what we want to do with looking back at it now with older eyes and more experience. Yeah, how do we engage with this, especially as you were describing watching these movies with your kids? Taking a different approach potentially than how it was for us, where, you know, we watched movies. I've watched movies mostly with my parents, so a lot of movies would not either get picked or would be turned off, where stuff happens that was not appropriate, whereas Jeff's experience was watching movies.
Watch it all.
Yeah, like that.
Take it in.
This was not an option.
Well, it's interesting that assault happens in most of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
That we've talked about.
And I mean, the John Hughes films that we'll eventually get to are like rife with terrible things.
Well,
like that.
And like the guy who grabbed Janie on the dance floor, who looked way older than her, the big tall guy, you know, who grabbed her on the dance floor and, you know, forced her to, you know, dance with him. And then the fight ensues, you know, that's an assault of some sort. And then, you know, and like, again, no diversity in terms of race in the movie. And then, but they do have the one terrible stereotype of the Jewish tailor, with Drew's suit, right? It's like, anyway, so yeah, absolutely. There are problems with the movie that I was identifying as well.
But you still enjoy it.
I loved it.
Okay.
I just,
that's fair.
It definitely has problems. And, but again, for all the reasons I talked about before, Janie and Lynn were relatable, and Lynn was kick-ass. I just loved her. She's such so many boss moves and one-liners, and especially at the end when she gets to be the, I can't remember the name. She took over for the host.
She got to take over for the host,
riding in on the chariot. Was very cool. I loved that movie. I would love to see it in the time capsule. Again, as a movie written by a woman, and I'm sure the script changed majorly when the director took over, as a lot of scripts do. And in editing, but it's very cool that a woman was involved.
And upon rewatch,
before we leave this
fun.
Movie, I gotta just circle back to Holly Gagné.
Sure,
I said, oh, she hasn't been in anything since. I think that was unfair. She's been in a lot of things.
Oh,
so the opposite of what you said?
Well, they're just not things that are on.
He's fact-checking,
I think the people in this room, they're not things that are on our radar.
Right.
Yeah.
So when I say she hasn't been in anything, it's just not anything that I've heard of, but that's unfair because I'm only one person. So she's actually been in a lot of things. She's very active. She's in a lot of movies and TV shows still, even like current things that are currently on TV.
Cool.
So she's still very active.
Mm.
Just I'm not familiar with any of the things that she's active in.
But her best work is Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Probably not.
I would actually say that that's probably not true.
I'm sure she's done many great things.
She has. Like I said, things that I just don't know but are critically acclaimed and things like that. So she's very active.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that summarizes our six picks. And we're going to take a quick break. And
We'll tally up the results.
Yeah.
We're going to count.
We're going to count the paper ballots.
Yeah.
We have a lot to count this time.
I know.
Awesome.
So stick with us.
The girls of Holy Grace have a reputation to uphold.
Day-o. Say day, you say day, you say day, you say day.
can do.
I hate him.
He's a guy and he's alive. What's there to hate?
He's just... Ugh, you know? I mean...
Is he gonna call you tomorrow?
I think so.
You are grounded.
We're in this thing together, huh?
We sure are.
The moves, the music, the movie.
Let's do it.
Girls just wanna have fun.
Heyo, you've reached Cinema Time Capsule. This is Dr. Retro Joel.
Oh, hey, this is Child of the Age Jeff.
Just leave us a message after the beep.
Hello, my name is Devin. I live in Grimsby and I am 43 years old. I was born in 1980, so the 80s movies were and still are by far my favorite era when it comes to films. One of my favorite films is Can't Buy Me Love, which came out in 1987, and I went to see that in the theater when I was 7 years old. I love Can't Buy Me Love. It's still to this day one of my favorite movies of all time. Patrick Dempsey went from total geek Ronald Miller to popular Ronnie by paying Cindy $1,000. The story I thought was amazing. Even as a little kid, it was easy to understand and follow. And even as an adult, I think it sends a really good message to just be yourself, especially in high school, because high school is so tough. It's a good message just to say, be yourself, be who you are, and, you know, people will like you for you. So yeah, Can't Buy Me Love, best movie, great message. The cast was really good in the movie as well. Love it. Always have, always will. Two thumbs up to Can't Buy Me Love.
Hi, this is Joe in Saskatoon, and my favorite 80s teen movie is Back to the Future. Of course it is. It's the perfect 80s teen movie. It has time travel, a DeLorean, 50s nostalgia, Alex P. Keaton from Family Ties. This movie, the trilogy, had it all. Well, I think, in my opinion, the first two movies were great, and the third movie was good. It was good for Doc Brown. It was good for the good doctor. So yeah, that's my choice. Back to the Future.
Hello, Cinema Time Capsule. My name is Mary. I'm from Hamilton, and originally I'm from Stony Creek, Ontario. I wanted to also talk about Say Anything, my all-time favorite teen movie. I listened to your episode where you discussed Say Anything, and you discussed basically all of the problematic things about it, which is great, so I don't have to talk about those. You know, I do think that kids now are a little more aware of some of the behavior in that movie. Like, if someone has explicitly said they want to break up with you, that you probably don't want to be hanging outside of their window at night or trying to convince them that they love you by wearing them down. But yeah, I think we could have used a little of that, a little reminder of that when we were growing up, but it is what it is. And Say Anything is an incredibly romantic movie. It goes so much deeper than any teen movie that I can think of from that era. Think of something like The Breakfast Club, where they sort of pair off at the end. And there's no rhyme or reason to why these people would ever want to be together, you know, which also, I guess, could reflect teenage love. But I think Say Anything does so much more to show how the feeling that they have for one another and what they do for one another, why they would want to be together. It's also an incredibly well-written and quotable movie. I used to scribble quotes from movies in my journal when I was younger, and I remember writing that speech that Lloyd gives at the table where he says that he doesn't want to sell anything, buy anything, or process anything as a career, and he sort of goes through all the things he doesn't want to do for a living, which is such a smart way that kids, you know, when you're young, that is sort of what you do. You kind of think, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do that. And he's a little bit lost, but it's just a very realistic portrayal, I think, of teen angst. I think it's a funny movie. There's some really sort of offbeat humor in it, like this scene, for example.
You all right, sir? You okay? I'm incarcerated, Lloyd!
I love that to this day. It's so funny. Such a funny scene. And I can't think of saying anything without thinking of the very end with the seatbelt sign on the plane. I was afraid of flying when I was a kid, and I still hate it. But to this day, I think of that scene where he tells her, just wait till the seatbelt sign is off and you'll be okay. And I literally to this day still do that when I'm on a plane. So thank you guys for your podcast. I enjoy it so much, and it's very funny, and really it makes me think about my childhood in a different way. So keep doing it. I love it. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Welcome back. Now is the time in the show where we go to the polls. And Joel, I'm going to let you run the polls down.
Do we need a drum roll?
Simon's going to insert that.
Excellent.
All right. We had an unbelievable turnout this time.
How did that happen, by the way?
I don't know. Your theory was Russian bots and or maybe interference in our election process, much like the our Canadian government is.
We hit a new PB.
Yeah.
How many? We got over 1,000 votes this time. Yeah. That's a PB for us, Christy. And maybe it's because of your
No, it was clout. Joel's email. It was Joel's email.
No, I think, Christy's reach.
Something happened.
I don't think so.
We've been hacked, but wonderfully we were so. Fine, we're going to go with it. So, Joel, can you give us a rundown? Yep. And we'll just say a couple things as you go. And
yep. So, in the sixth place to Christy's consternation is Girls Just Want to Have Fun received 1% of the vote.
Not surprised.
Why are you not surprised?
That's exactly what I thought. No one even knows about this movie.
Yeah, it's true. It's one of those.
It's a lesser known.
It's a lesser known, yeah.
Yeah, people don't have nostalgia for it. Most people, when I mention it, they're like, I know the song. Yeah. I've never heard of the film. Sarah Jessica Parker, Helen Hunt? What? Yeah. How did I miss that?
Well, okay. That's part of what we hope with this podcast is now a whole bunch of people will be hearing about this movie exists.
A thousand people.
Yeah. So we're hope for 1,000 listeners.
I hope. So Sarah Jessica can get those residuals.
Yes. Yeah. So that was
not coming surprised in sixth at place. All.
And, then we move up to a tie for, I guess that would make it fifth because it's a tie for fourth, which is Can't Buy Me Love and The Karate Kid. It's tied with 2%.
I'm surprised about Karate Kid being that low, to be honest.
I think about possibly maybe it's not seen as a teen movie. Maybe seen more as an action or martial arts.
Really?
I don't know.
I don't think.
No. I think if you put it in a different category, it would do better.
The action directors I've met probably would disagree.
I don't know. I think it's more of a martial arts film, and wrong. I think it would have.
It's not the exact same fit with a teen movie. I can see that because it has the martial arts.
Yeah, because no other
to me,
people
that was
got
more Dead Poets.
But
true. But also, those two are a bit. They don't fit.
No one got kicked in the face in any of the other movies.
True.
So that may because. If you put, Karate Kid's a huge movie. Can't Buy Me Love, I could see that it wouldn't
do as
well.
There's fighting in the other movies. There's violence. We got some violence.
But not that's not the focus.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that there's some fighting, but true. I thought that would rank it higher. With how do you say it, Joel?
The karate?
Yes.
Community?
Joel's son?
The karate community won't listen to this episode because they don't see karate in the title. So that's
it's
why.
It's not for them. It's just not for them.
Foregoing it. So,
but I also think that similar to what you said about Girls Just Want to Have Fun, I think Can't Buy Me Love is a lesser known teen movie too.
Fair.
Sure it is.
There's not nearly as many people that would know that movie.
That's fair.
So
just the hardcore Patrick Dempsey fans who went back in time to watch everything that McDreamy has been in.
So then we have in third place, which had the lead for quite a while.
It did have the
Jeff
lead.
Told me.
John B. was very upset.
Oh my gosh, he was choked, as he would say, that this was not in the lead. Was Footloose, 15%.
That's number three.
That's number three.
That's a bit surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it was such a classic.
Yeah, and it was in the lead. It had a handy lead for quite a while, but
then the Russian bots came in.
Yep.
Maybe one too many dance montages.
I don't know.
Apparently.
I like the montages. Yeah.
There's fighting in it. It's got
everything.
It's got all the things.
So second place is Dead Poets Society of 22%.
I thought that would be lower, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it was such a dramatic.
It is
set in the 50s. It's not an 80s teen movie.
It's atypical of the teen genre, I think.
It was the most different.
But it's got a lot of guts to it.
It's got a lot of heart. And I mean, honestly, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, that's probably a big part. So he's not even a teen. And
we
he's
all wanted
the,
him
the
as a
star of the film.
Well, we all wanted him as a teacher.
That's a good point. Right? It's relatable in that way of we wish we had such a strong teacher that was maybe
that
a mentor.
Understood us.
Yeah.
And encouraged us to be ourselves.
So the winner, obviously,
was.
I didn't see this coming.
I did.
Yeah. Oh, I did. 100%.
So 58%.
I'm not surprised.
Which I don't think it's a. I doubt it was a one for one voting deal, but say anything.
I'm not surprised.
I'm thinking.
I guess I am a little bit surprised that it won so dramatically. Yeah. I thought it would have been closer between Say Anything and Footloose.
Yes, I thought Footloose was going to be second, but I am not surprised that if people had to choose the ultimate 80s classic movie. Why do you think that? I think the boombox scene is just, when you think of what is the iconic 80s scene, I think the boombox scene takes, comes to people's minds right away. And I think, I don't know, I feel like the emotional level of it, the comedic level, I feel like, you know, a lot of people just have such great nostalgia for that movie as a feel good movie, again, for the nerdy guys. It was not necessarily the most popular, but it was the sensitive guy.
Right.
And, you know, it appeals to just so many age groups. Like, I feel like an adult could have watched that and probably enjoyed it too, you know? Like, because Lloyd seemed a little bit older and more mature than a teenager.
And I wonder if, because we had a lot of people referencing John Hughes films, that fits sort of more in that.
Yes,
it does. So if you loved...
Yeah.
Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. You probably liked Say Anything.
100%.
And if that was...
Well, there were some crossover actors for sure, right?
Well, and I feel like John Cusack, like he was an iconic actor at that time too. Like,
I think he was in a movie from 1983 all the way to present.
Like he was in a movie every year.
Except for like
classic.
Maybe 1 year. Like he was all through the 80s and 90s.
Well, I mean, Joan, who's not even credited for that movie.
She didn't even get a credit,
even though she had lines.
Yeah,
she was nominated for an Oscar that year, and she only did that as a favor to her little brother. Mm. And they didn't even want John Cusack for that role. I think they wanted Robert Downey
Jr. Cusack was nominated for an Academy Award for this role.
Not that role. No.
I was going to say, wow.
No.
What role?
I can't remember.
I just want to point out that my two movies finished first and second.
Congratulations.
So, you know,
Child
of the 80s comes through. He knows the people.
So the Russian bot is named Child of the 80s.
He spent all day.
Hey, kids.
Anything.
And right. I brought forward the two of the least popular movies.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Karate Kid and
you're never going to be able to say it.
I honestly think Karate Kid would win a different
thing. I was surprised. I thought Footloose and Karate Kid would have been a little bit
there higher. Will be vindication at some point.
Ralph is doing fine. He's all right. Got Cobra Kai now. He survived. So he wrote that book.
He did?
Yeah, he wrote a book when Cobra Kai came out.
Well, he wrote a book.
Pardon?
You wrote a book too.
You
and Ralph are like neck and neck right now.
It's true.
Christy, we appreciate
his wasn't even
you coming on and giving us a different perspective than we've had up to this point. And we appreciate
introducing
it.
You guys to the Bechdel test. Now you will never watch a movie the same way
again. I never will. And that's part of what we do here is we try to learn, we try to grow, and we have fun with what we liked as kids. But thank you for your perspective. And I feel, Joel, do you feel... like more intelligent now?
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm not hanging out with me.
You've raised the floor dramatically.
You've raised the floor of this show,
well,
so you're welcome back
anytime.
This is so fun.
This was so, and I really appreciate you guys including me. Even being asked is very strange. My husband is a film producer, that's
whatever about him.
He's usually the one who gets. He's on these things. I'm like, why are you asking me?
It was a dig on him. I was like, yeah, Todd, is Christy available? Yeah, we'd like to talk about film with her.
And he's like, what? As he says, our mutual interests in film make for a very strange Venn diagram. He's accurate, but anyway, I really appreciate the chance, and reliving my childhood is wonderful, and getting to rewatch these movies was so much fun. And also like analyzing them with you guys. Yeah. It was really interesting because just having a new perspective on them as an adult and then seeing them also as a parent was great. And this was so much fun. Awesome. Thank you. You guys are just having a great time here.
Thanks.
I'm pretty envious.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome to visit us on the couch.
All right. A couple final thoughts here from me. First of all, you guys might feel smarter. You don't look any smarter.
Nope. We know we're not.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Harsh.
Well, we have to, you know, get the visuals out for the listeners and viewers because they can't see what's happening. But a kind of a random throwback to earlier in the podcast here, we talked about the casting director from Grease.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Joel Thurm. So Joel Thurm is a famous casting director. I have a terrible head for names, so I forgot.
You're in good company. There.
All right.
That guy. Did the
you know
thing.
The guy in the thing? And you know that movie?
That
we watched.
Joel, do you want to walk us out?
All right. Well, thanks as usual for joining us and viewing these films with us. We look forward to what? You can't this mouth stuff. We got something to say.
So you're supposed to say check us out on. Oh, that's your role. Oh, okay. You close the show.
But you're mouthing things to me. I'm like, I don't know what you're saying.
So. Now I'm pointing at this. Okay. I'm pointing at the notes right now. If you're at home, and I'm pointing out what Joel's supposed to do next. Okay. It's a formula, folks.
Yes. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us on another episode. We look forward to sharing some more movies with you. In order to do that, check us out on Facebook, Instagram. Send us a message at cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your voices. Send us an audio message for our answering machine and engage with us around this topic and the next one.
Until then, we'll see you at the movies.
I'm going to take out Diane Court.
Diane Court doesn't go out. She's a brain.
Trapped in the body of a game show hostess.
We don't want to see you get hurt.
I want to get hurt. So it's Lloyd and let's go out.
Oh, thanks, but I'm busy.
So it's you. Monumentally busy?
Well, not monumentally.
Hi, Lloyd Domish. I'm an athlete, so I rarely drink. Kickboxing, you ever heard of kickboxing, sport of the future? I can see by your face, no. My point is you can relax because your daughter will be safe with me for the next 7 to 8 hours, sir.
Hi.
Maybe Diane Court really likes Lloyd. If you were Diane Court, would you honestly fall for Lloyd?
Yeah.
What are your plans for the future?
Spend as much time possible with Diane.
No, really.
I'm totally and completely serious.
I'm not sure if I should say, you know. I just wanted to tell you that...
No, we don't have to say it.
How do you know what I'm going to say?
I don't know what you're going to say.
I'm just going to tell you that I love you. I said it.
I know.
I gave her my heart and she gave me a pen.
Lloyd, man, no baby's worth it, dude.
All you gotta do is find a girl who looks just like her, and then dump her, man.
You guys know so much about women. How come you're here at, like, a gas and sip on a Saturday night? No women anywhere.
By choice, man.
Conscious choice.
I'm a guy. I have pride.
Well, you're not a guy. No, the world is full of guys. Be a man.
In your eyes, the light.
John Cusack, Ione Skye, Say Anything.
This has been the Cinema Time Capsule Podcast. For more information about Cinema Time Capsule, please email us at cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. This podcast was produced by Simon Wielden. The theme song was performed by Bruce Turney and Simon Wielden. Thanks for listening.